It's a matter of great fortune for me to be here with us. There are so many distinguished scholars. And I feel very hesitant to speak in the presence of scholars like Dayanandji, who are themselves great exponents of the Vedic lore. My own acquaintance with the Veda is not so long as the acquaintance which many Vedic scholars ought to have. Therefore, I am not so qualified to speak on the subject. But it is always good to share whatever one has acquired, whatever one has thought, and thus to be benefited by mutual understanding, mutual enrichment. It is in that spirit that I am here with you this morning and will be with all of you for the next 7 days. The subject which has been fixed for these lectures, to my mind, is extremely important for our age. Why should we think of Veda at the present juncture of human history? While answering this question, I shall take support of 4 or 5 volumes that I have studied in this context. One is, of course, Sri Aurobindo's great work called The Secret of the Veda. The second is his commentary on Ishopanishad and Kenopanishad. The third is his essays on the Gita. The fourth is the foundations of Indian culture. Fifth is the life divine of Sri Aurobindo. And finally, the synthesis of yoga. These are the volumes in my mind at present. And this series will be devoted to some of the fundamental questions which have been centrally confronted by Sri Aurobindo, and to my mind, answered with so much of illumination that I feel extremely enthused to share with everyone as to what is contained in this great teaching of Sri Aurobindo, who has assigned central importance to the Veda. Now we must remember that Sri Aurobindo himself had no training even in Sanskrit. He lived in England from the age of 7 to 21, and he mastered during that period Greek and Latin. Of course, English, French, German, Italian, Spanish. Even his own mother tongue, he started only for probationary period of ICS examination. As we all know, he had taken ICS examination. He passed it. And he was for 1 year in probation. During that period, he started learning his own mother tongue, Bengali. Of course, afterwards, he felt no call for the ICS and got himself disqualified. He got disqualified because his father wanted him to be ICS officer and his own heart did not consent to it. So he failed to appear at the writing test And even though twice or thrice he was given another chance, he did not take it. And thus he got disqualified. Anyway, Maharaj of Baroda at that time happened to be in England. And because of the encounter with him, who was so much impressed by Sri Aurobindo that he invited him to be secretary and brought him to India. It is very interesting that Sri Aurobindo, who had no background basically about India, when he came to Apollo Bandar, as he says, as he set his foot on the soil of India, a great calm entered into his consciousness, a calm of infinity. It is as if Mother India blessed him as he entered into the portals of India. And when he went to Baroda, it is here that he studied Sanskrit, not only Bengali but Sanskrit, Gujarati, Marathi, Hindustani, and later on he studied Tamil also. So he had thus mastery of about 12 languages, both East and Western. And during his entire period of stay in Baroda, from 1893 to 1906, he had of course read something about the Veda, but he himself believed, under the influence of the then Western thinking, that Veda has only a historical importance because it's a document of Indian history. He also shared the ideas of the Western thinkers that Veda is an antique document. It has a collection of poems recited by barbarians in the primitive age. And maybe that it has something to do with the development of the Upanishads. And he thought Upanishads are the real starting point of the history of Indian thought. It is only when he came to Pondicherry in 1910, he began to have certain yogic experiences. Particularly, the experiences of Saraswati and Ila. These are the two important goddesses in the Vedic rigs. And his experiences unfolded in such a manner that he wanted to find out the psychological truths which were being revealed to him at that time. And he had found nothing, even in the Upanishads, to explain those psychological experiences that he was undergoing. It is then that he turned to the Veda, and when he started reading the Veda, he found in the Veda the true exposition of three goddesses which are mentioned in the rigs of the Veda very explicitly: Bharati or Mahi, Ila, and Saraswati. Tisro Devyaha, the three great goddesses about whom some of the rigs describe at some length. Later on, he also found the concept of Daksha in the Veda. And therefore, daksha or dakshina. So ultimately he found that there are in the Veda four goddesses. And although the Veda speaks of seven rivers, seven goddesses, seven fires, he could identify these four: Bharati or Mahi, Ila, Saraswati, Dakshina. Now, what is the meaning of these four goddesses? He began to realize as he transcended certain levels of consciousness which are far above the human mind. We must remember that at this time, Sri Aurobindo himself had three major experiences before he came to Pondicherry in 1910. Now, this is very necessary to understand how Sri Aurobindo entered into the Veda. Sri Aurobindo had begun the practice of yoga in 1901. And he himself has said he had been practicing pranayama for hours and hours, but he had no spiritual experience as a result of pranayama. The only experiences he had was that of increase of health and the flow of poetry. Sri Aurobindo is known as a great yogin, great philosopher, great exegete. But that he was a supreme poet is not sufficiently known. But as Sri Aurobindo says, his speciality is poetry. Philosophy, he says, I am not a philosopher at all. But poetry is his basic work, actually. In fact, even in the Baroda period, some of his great poems refer to themes of Nala and Damayanti, to Urvashi, to Chitrangada, and many other themes connected with Indian culture. He had translated, for example, Malavikagnimitram of Kalidasa directly from Sanskrit into English in the poetical form. He had also translated Vikramorvashiyam of Kalidasa into English, again in poetical form. So his main work was poetry. And at that time, because of pranayama, he had a great flow of poetry. In 1906, he had felt that he was making no progress in the field of yoga. And then, as you know, in 1907, there was a famous Surat Congress. And at that time, Congress was not running on proper lines, according to him. And he wanted a very bold program for India. And moderates were not in favor of that bold program. Sri Aurobindo wanted to demand complete independence of India, whereas moderates wanted some kind of concessions, like Indians going to ICS examination without going to England, some constitutional reforms by which some Indians can be presented in the parliament. And Sri Aurobindo had found that these are very lame propositions, and India must be free completely from British rule. So it was he who was responsible for what is called the wrecking of the Congress of Surat, at that time. But soon thereafter, he went to Baroda, and because of some acquaintance with a yogi called Lele, to whom he said that he had no yogic experience. So he said to him, you sit in meditation and you will find that thoughts come to you from outside. This was a revelation to him, because normally we all think that thoughts arise in our mind. But he pointed out the thoughts come to you from outside, and before the thoughts come to you, you fling them out. Don't allow them to enter into the field of the mind. This is the technique that was given by Lele to him. And Sri Aurobindo did not question the whole thing. He simply sat down like an obedient pupil. And he says, Sri Aurobindo has described his whole experience. And he said, as he sat in meditation, thoughts he could see coming from outside, and he could fling them. Now, this is a remarkable feat that Sri Aurobindo, in this preliminary exercise, he could fling away all the thoughts that were invading in the mind. And then, as he went on flinging away the thoughts, in 3 days' time, he himself has said, I entered into the state of nirvana. This is also a most remarkable phenomenon in the history of yoga. A similar experience was also obtained by Sri Ramakrishna under the guidance of Totapuri. He had also within a short time attained to the experience of the Brahman, completely silent, that pure experience of what is described in Mandukya Upanishad, Turiyavastha, a state of the Brahman which is absolutely pure without seduce of energy, one reality without the second, ekam eva dvitiyam, and an experience in which he found that the whole world was hushed. And in that state of experience, he continued to live on and on and on and on. He felt that the senses were perceiving the world, but the world had no reality. In fact, this is the famous experience on which the whole philosophy of Shankara is established. We must remember that Shankara's philosophy, although rationalistic, and by rational basis it establishes the thesis of one reality without the second, his ultimate argument is Shruti. And the appeal to the experience of the Brahman described in the Upanishads. It is that experience which Sri Aurobindo says he acquired in 3 days' time. This was in 1907. And then Sri Aurobindo said that experience remained with him permanently. That is to say, it is no more an experience, it was a realization. Sri Aurobindo himself has made a distinction between experience and realization. In a state of experience, a supernormal reality is felt, glimpsed, touched, lived in for a short time. But then you come back to the normal state of consciousness. In a state of realization, even though the normal state of consciousness can be seen, can be experienced, the other one is never left. And it continues. Now this is the realization that he had achieved in 1907, 3 years before he went to Pondicherry. Thereafter, he was asked to, from Baroda, he was asked to go to Bombay to give a speech. And he told his teacher, Lele, I have no thoughts. So, the teacher had said, you just pray and the thoughts will come. And then he attained that possibility of thinking at will or expressing thoughts or receiving thoughts at will. And from 1907, whatever he wrote, himself has said, whatever he wrote was written by him in a state of silent mind. And what he wrote was tremendous. If you read his writings from 1907 to 1908, he was editor of a magazine, a daily, called Vande Mataram. Even today when you read those articles, they set you on fire. A series of articles that he wrote on Vande Mataram . It is through the pages of Vande Mataram that a kind of revolution came into existence in India, and there was a tremendous stride towards the goal of India's independence. In 1908, in the month of May, he was arrested because there was what is called Alipur bomb case. His younger brother Baran was a revolutionary, and Sri Aurobindo was secret leader of this revolutionary movement of India. And Baran was making experiments in making bombs at that time. And Maniktala Garden was one ancestral property in which these secret programs were being carried out. Britishers came to know of it and they raided, and in one of the documents Sri Aurobindo's name was there, so he was also arrested and he was charged of sedition. Now this particular arrestation of Sri Aurobindo and what happened to thereafter is one of the most important events in the life of Sri Aurobindo. And Sri Aurobindo has himself described this particular development in a speech that he delivered after he was acquitted in 1909. For 1 year, he remained as an under-trial prisoner in Alipur jail. And there, he gave a speech after he came out, and this speech is worth reading by everybody because it gives us a clear idea as to what Sri Aurobindo was engaged in, what was the scope of his work for India's independence.